I'm talking about Stephanie Lake and Robin Fox. And then we're going to be talking about a pile of bones.
Yes.
Which is very ominous. For people that have missed the last time you guys were in separately, let's start with you, Stephanie.
Sure.
What's a little bit about your background? We've asked everyone today about where they got their, you know, their creative impetus from. Can you sort of pinpoint back in your past when that happened for you?
Oh, well, I'm a dancer and choreographer. Yes. So I think I've always been dancing. I think I was bossing my little sisters around, making them dress up in curtains and put on shows for the parents. Didn't everyone do that, though? I don't know if I'm particularly special in that regard. But, yeah, definitely directing shows from a very young age and dancing around the house. But I didn't take it up seriously until I was in my mid-teens, which is quite late for a female dancer particularly. So I didn't do the formal, I didn't do a lot of ballet when I was young. I went straight into contemporary dance, and once I discovered it, it was a pretty instantaneous love.
And what would you see as the differences between then and now in terms of what contemporary dance is?
Oh, yes. Well, it's always, I mean, by definition, it's always evolving. Mm. So it's actually probably impossible to define,
right.
And that's what makes it interesting, but difficult.
Yeah.
So it's obviously something that's adapting and changing all the time.
Fantastic. Mm. And then how did you sort of take that step from, you know, actually being a dancer and then to becoming a choreographer and the sort of star of dance that you are now?
Oh, that's very kind. there hasn't really been a distinction for me. It wasn't a conscious choice to switch from one to the other. I've always been choreographing. So I think I was really lucky in my early experiences with dance that we were in the youth company that I was in when I was a young one. We all made sections of the work, and we were all very involved in the creation of the pieces. It wasn't... it wasn't very hierarchical. And so I always felt that it was possible for me, and I did it from a really young age. And I feel quite lucky that it happened that way. So
Is that completely out of the norm for most people?
Yeah,
in the
industry? Think, for example, in the classical world, that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
You'd make a conscious decision at a certain stage to switch over to the other side. But no, for me, they were always braided together. So, but really in the last probably 5 or 7 years, I've really been focusing on my choreographic work and had some great opportunities, so have kept pursuing it. But I still perform as well for the choreographers that I love, but I think that's probably winding up given my age.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, I know.
Do you like to choreograph your own work for yourself a lot as well?
Oh, no, I never put myself in my works.
Really?
It's a nightmare. Oh, I was in the first work that I... the first big major work that I made when I'd first graduated from VCA and got a grant to make my first big piece. I put myself in that mostly for budgetary reasons. It's cheaper, you know.
Yep.
But, oh, God. And then I looked at the video after we put it on. It was quite successful. It did really well. But then I watched it back and just thought, oh, my goodness, if it was an outside eye on that, I would have done it very differently. Things that felt great being inside of it were not necessarily great for the audience. But, so you live and learn.
Really interesting, though. Hmm. You know, you'd think you sort of would have a shorthand with yourself in that way, but you like having that kind of separation.
No, I've got to control it from the outside. Got it. There has to be a director. I think it's complicated. Right. For some people, it really works, and they really obviously embody the choreographic intention perfectly. But I love working with dancers. That's my deep joy. And so I love to be on the outside watching it unfold, and I need to be in control of the rhythms and the arc of the piece. So it's important to be on the outside.
And is there a point in each show that you put together where you are able to step back just enough to kind of to see it as a holistic thing?
Oh, yeah, hopefully. And
does it happen at the same point in each show, or does it really depend on each show?
No, it's different for each show. Mm. It is, yes. And... you hope that happens in time before you put it in front of an audience, which is what we're up to at the moment.
Right.
Much. Yeah.
Now, we're going to be talking with Robin as well. Robin is, as I said, has come back to the fold and is with us again today. Yeah. We're thinking it was about a year ago that you were in here. Mm-hmm. Now, you have you've done the original composition for this new show, Pile of Bones. But for people that missed the original interview with you, you know, how did you get into composing to begin with? Was it something that you were always passionate about?
I think, yeah, I did tell this story last time, so I won't bore your regular listeners, hopefully, by repeating too much of it. But basically, I'm a failed drummer, and everything that I do now is an attempt to sort of play stadium drums. That's all I want to do. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And my mother, as I think I talked about last time, she was a composer of computer music in the 80s, right. the 1980s, yeah. And so she was composing computer music back when they were the sizes of small apartments and. And she wrote very experimental avant-garde music. She was an opera singer previously and sort of made a transition into more experimental music. My father's also a really accomplished musician and a radio broadcaster, in fact, on ABC Classic mm-hmm. FM. So you know, I come from an incredibly musical family, and even my stepfather was heavily involved in music technology. So when I was a kid, we always had the first of everything that came out. So I remember making music with the very first samplers that were ever invented. So he would bring those home, and I'd make compositions out of car crash sounds and cat noises and all that kind of stuff. And this was all, you know, always happening all the time. And yeah, with a few slight diversions, I've always been involved with playing music in some form or another. And now, I mean, my work varies from sort of doing audiovisual laser shows and public art installations and lots of different projects. It really sort of it's sort of almost diversifying to survive as a freelance artist in a lot of ways. But everything from photography exhibitions, actually. But music is my main love and it's my main focus. And I sort of fell into working with contemporary dance. Must be about almost 10 years ago now, a piece with Chunky Move called Mortal Engine, where I did a laser and sound component of that work. And ever since then, I've worked really regularly with choreographers. And I love the fact that when you work with a choreographer, sound and movement are so intricately connected. It's very different to working in a medium like film or theatre from a composer's point of view, because your contribution to the work is so central, really, and you get a lot of creative freedom that you don't get in other genres where you're trying to serve a narrative, for example, or you're always being turned down for dialogue and other kind of pesky things like that. You know? It's like,
turn it up.
With contemporary dance, I feel like there's a lot of latitude to work with sound. And Steph and I have made probably upward of 10 pieces together now, so it's been a really long collaborative relationship. And
when was the first collaboration between the two of you?
The first piece we made was Duel.
Which was
a hot little piece. It was a duo.
Still touring the world.
Still tours. Yeah. It was in Hong Kong not long ago. Yeah. It was a fantastic piece. We received no funding, did it all on the smell of an oily rag. It was a real labour of love. I still have a fondness for that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, how does that make you feel that it's still living on and sort of reaching so many more audience members, you know, globally?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's great. It's just so good if you can create something that lives again and again and again, particularly something live. I mean, it's easy enough to do that in a recorded form, and now, of course, with the ubiquity of the internet, stuff will exist forever and never die. But with live forms like performance and dance, to have the opportunity to restage that, and often it's like getting the band back together every time, because there might be a couple of years in between, and suddenly you're back together, the cast is back together, the crew's back together. You know, it's like getting everyone back in the same room, and that energy is you get to tap that same energy you had with the excitement of creating the work initially, and you get to relive that moment over and over again.
Actually, with that work in particular, I'm thinking there was one tour where Sarah got engaged to her partner, and then there was the next tour she was pregnant, and then the next one we had the baby tour.
Yeah.
It was like this whole life cycle thing. Yeah, it was great.
And what does it mean for you two to sort of come back together and collaborate again? You know, does it make it the job easier? You know, do you have a bit of a shorthand with each
other? Oh, definitely, in some ways, doesn't it? Look at Robin looking down.
No one can see the single tear.
I should mention, too, we're also a couple, so there's an added level of complexity there.
Well, I used to have a studio at home, it was quite funny. I no longer do, but I'd be working in my studio at home, and every now and again, Steph's head would just pop around the door and she'd say, "Is that yours, that sound?
What are you
got any plans for that?" And I'd always just have a folder where I'd put all the things that Steph liked would be shuffled across into the Steph
terrible.
Folder.
But no, it's fantastic. And it is, I guess the best way I can describe it is we're not too polite with each other. Mm. You know, it's really direct and efficient because we understand each other and we don't have to, we don't have to watch what we're saying.
Right. Mm. And is the process, the actual logistical process, a bit of like give and take of, you know, changing the music to modify to fit the dance, or alternatively,
both ways. Yeah, it goes both ways. So, as things are being created, we bounce back and forth with each other. So I'll hear something and it will inspire something that I'm making, mm-hmm. and likewise the other way. And then at this stage where we're really getting down to the nuts and bolts and the fine details, mm-hmm. before we put it in front of an audience, it gets very, very specific, and it gets to the point where it's like, okay, that needs two less seconds before that transition. And it's exciting.
And do you know all of those things... I'm probably answering my own question here, but, you know, without the dancers involved, you know, do you have to see it staged before you can even really get an idea of how much needs to be cut or manipulated or moved? Or
I think there's a lot that comes together in that final push to put it on stage in the theatre, because that's when you see all of the other elements that haven't been in the rehearsal studio come into play, even costume, lighting, all of that stuff. Even there was one, I'd been working with the opening track of this piece throughout the entire development period, and I got into the theatre and suddenly on a full spectrum PA, it just sounded like shit.
And so I had it wasn't that bad. But
well, no, but it was completely wrong.
The new thing you made is much better.
Well, I had to go and totally redesign the opening of the piece. So so a lot happens in the theatre, and I think for Steph as well, often there'll be formal changes. Things in the studio, it's really interesting. Even when we do a studio showing, people are really close to the dancers. It's really intimate. There's a lot of, you know, they're right in your face, and you can sort of get flicked with their sweat and everything. It's a very sort of, you know, close and proximate. And then suddenly you're sitting back in the theatre. It's quite a different thing to look from a distance and see it all set up in this proscenium way. So I think that what happens is that the transitions become really interesting. You know, how are we going to get from this section to that section? Worked this way in the studio, it's not working this way in the theatre. Mm. So I think that, you know, the final push in the theatre, it's a really intense creative process.
Mm. Wonderful. Let's talk about Pile of Bones quite quickly, unfortunately. You know, what can people expect from the new show?
Well, it's intensely physical, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Really, it's, possibly, I think I've pushed these dancers to breaking point. It's amazing. It's just absolutely phenomenal. They're totally blowing me away. But, it's a very, as always with my work, I think it's a very visceral experience. So the sound is big, immersive, amazing. There's really striking lighting elements, and you get really taken on quite an eccentric, strange journey in this piece. It starts very, very small and contained, and over the course of the work, every element explodes. So by the end, we're in this really rapturous, pulsing place. Yeah, and along the way, I was interested in looking at the intricacies of relationships and themes of suppression and nurture and desire and lots of rich subject matter. But really, it's really driven by the choreography.
Right. And would there be anything that you would call a narrative in it, or is it...
Oh, it's not a pretty surreal one, if there is. Which I love. I love it. It has an emotional logic, but it's really, it's almost dreamlike. It's such a trip.
I think emotional logic's a really good way to describe contemporary dance in a lot of ways, because narrative... So, in my experience, and this is a broadside now, but when I see contemporary dance that tries to deal with narrative, I don't enjoy it nearly as much as contemporary dance that is abstract. And then when we made Duel, for example, that was a duet, and the way people read that piece was so interesting to me. Everybody brought their own narrative, and so the story gets mapped onto that emotional logic, which is really like the scaffold, I guess, that people can then bring their experience to, and that's a much more open format. And so, but the cast in Pile of Bones is just amazing. The dancer, and it ranges from, you know, really experienced dancers. There's only four, so it's not a huge range, but there's like really experienced people on stage who sort of have this amazing sort of command of the space, and then particularly Marlo Benjamin, a younger dancer who's just phenomenal and just incredible
so
energy.
Much. Talent on the stage.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent on
the
stage. Yeah,
it's very exciting.
Now, how can people get, firstly, more information and book their tickets for Pile of Bones at Arts House in North Melbourne?
Yes, so you can go to their website, artshouse.com, I believe.
Oh, terrible. .au.
Thank you.
Artshouse.com.au.
And when
does it kick off?
It kicks off on Tuesday. So
very
soon.
Close.
Yeah, we're very, very close. We're down to the wire. And it's a really short season, so if you're interested, please book, because it will be over in a flash.
And
it finishes on Saturday
night.
Very
quickly.
Yeah, it will sell out, so yeah. Don't... You snooze, you lose.
Exactly.
And even if you think you don't like contemporary dance, this is the piece. This is the one that's going to change your mind. It's going to change your mind.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Robin Fox and Stephanie Lake, wonderful, creative people. We're just so, happy to have you in Melbourne creating
lovely.
Beautiful things.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine. Joy 94.9.